Hello and welcome everyone back to another episode of The Publisher Lab. I'm Tyler Bishop and alongside me virtually, if you're watching this in probably another window or she'll pop up here briefly, is Shelby Kang. Shelby, welcome back to the podcast.
Hello, nice to be back.
It's been a interesting time as we've gone through different iterations and ideas behind the podcast, but so now people can watch and listen on a lot of different platforms. So if you've been just a previous audio listener, check us out on video, or if you're just discovering it now via video, surprise, surprise, every place that you would imagine you could listen to this to, you can listen to it as well. So to all of our newest listeners, hopefully we don't disappoint, and thanks for listening. And Shelby, what do we have on the docket today?
The first thing I wanted to start off with was from Media Post, and it's about how the U.S. ad economy has risen almost 6% in August, and this is the first expansion since March. So this comes from a Media Post analysis of Standard Media Index's U.S. ad market tracker. So in August, digital ad spend soared almost 18% over August 2019. And during the same period, national TV advertising has declined almost 11%. So this data kind of affirms the projections that we'll kind of begin to see more rebounding heading into the fourth quarter. So on top of all this, our very own ad revenue index hit 100 for US ad rates on September 20th. That was really surprising to me just because we're still kind of far off from the holidays and of course Black Friday. So I wanted to kind of pick your brain a little bit about what expectations you have for fourth quarter. And can you dig into how you think this fourth quarter is going to be different from the rest of the year, but also how it may differ from last year?
Yeah, I mean, so I can theorize and then also speak with some level of expertise on this. But I mean, it's like everything in 2020 where there's always going to be some surprises and no one really knows 100% what's going on, but there are some factors here that we can point to that would tell you why publisher ad rates or even why online advertising is seeing such a surge, especially when you look back to March or April. I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty. And so if you're an advertiser around that time, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know, looking back hindsight, it's obvious that there were some clear parties that were going to benefit here. But realistically, you know, everybody, the marketing strategy in March and April was cut the marketing budget, you know, and which is something I'm sure you can relate to. And I think that one of the things that's happened here is as we've progressed through this, I think as people have been able to adapt to more remote work, and just in general, not being able to go out and, you know, go about normal consumer behavior, that's pushed people to more online content consumption, more online shopping. You know, there's charts that we've pointed to before where you can see basically like e-commerce penetration in the United States alone has grown basically what the expectation was over the course of the next 8 years in basically 2 months. And so when you start thinking about that from a standpoint of like, if I'm an advertiser, how do I reach the audience? Well, advertisers are trying to basically get their e-com or their digital strategies worked out. And that means the marketing budget that we're going in all these other places where you might've expected people to go into, you know, retail locations or any other mode of distribution. Now it's happening online. So that's where people are to begin with. And so you're basically seeing like this huge, like shift that's happening all at once where people are, marketers specifically, are figuring out how to spend their budgets better digitally. And that means a lot of competition. You know, if you look at where the investments are coming from in terms of venture capital right now, a lot of it's in direct consumer brands and e-commerce platforms. It's the wild, wild west all of a sudden, where if you are a product maker of any kind and you can sell directly to your consumers, whether it's, you know, by buying ads on Facebook or Google or wherever and getting in front of, you know, a populace to adopt your product versus, you know, whatever they were doing before, that's pretty enticing. And so those dollars flow digitally, especially when you're seeing investments being made. And Maybe speaking specifically to more so of the fourth quarter now, one of the theories in advertising, and also you're seeing it in earnings reports from public companies, they're expecting basically us to just get started with, you know, holiday shopping, you know, basically now, as soon as the start of the fourth quarter. They're hoping that people don't wait till November. They're not waiting till even after Halloween, Halloween being something, you know, may not be relatable to everyone listening, but at least here in the U.S., it's the last day of October. The expectation is that basically beginning now, people are going to begin holiday shopping. I think that that's a bold prediction and expectation, but advertisers are definitely pushing that. And, you know, that's not going to stop them from spending these budgets. I think in a lot of cases, they've got a lot left over.
Do you expect the ad revenue index to hit 100 this year for Black Friday to kind of beat out the record that it's set so far?
Well, I mean, when you see it on September 20th, that's odd, right? Traditionally, you see that 100 mark every year on Black Friday. And I think last year was 99. So that means, you know, the year before still maintained the top mark in 2018. If you would have asked me, you know, back in July or June, I would have said probably not. But now, you know, maybe it hits it on Black Friday, but, you know, we might hit it a couple more times before then. And then if that's the case, you know, who knows? I think it's really hard to predict, but I think you can imagine that hitting it on September 20th means that we'll probably hit it again before Black Friday.
And one thing I want to note is that we're just talking about US ad rates. I know on the ad revenue index, if you enter in your email, you can kind of do a drop down of different countries, and all the other countries are, for the most part, kind of like at the same rate that they've been at for the past few months. I think with the exception of India starting to kind of slowly ramp up again. But yeah, just one thing to note that we are talking about the US market.
Yeah, and I think that that is important to note because there are different parts of the globe that have been impacted by the pandemic differently. I think the global, you know, move towards digital is fairly common. But I think a lot of the businesses that operate in those sectors, in many cases, the ones that are operating digitally are the same ones that were operating in those spaces in a traditional sense before. And so they're both hurting and trying to grow at the same time. And so it's this push and pull. But I think you are going to see a place like India, which has been impacted a little bit more slowly at the start, but more dramatically here recently, start to recover here in Q4, if I had to guess. But yeah, I mean, India is a really great example of somebody that's you know, been lagging behind everything else so far.
All right. So the next topic I have on deck, I believe comes from What's New in Publishing, but it's about creating content for younger audiences. So I know this is something that we've kind of touched on in the past, but I have noticed kind of just more and more recently the past few months, I feel like Gen Z is really kind of starting to take their own shape and kind of like
growing up on us.
They really are.
You're Gen Z, right?
Right? Technically I'm on the border. So I was born in 96, which some people say is a millennial. Some say it's borderline Gen Z. I like to agree with Dwayne, our founder, and say that being a millennial is a state of mind. And I feel like I am a millennial personally.
The mindset. Yeah.
Yeah. But I do have some respect for the Gen Zers because I feel like they're really kind of starting to grow into themselves. So I pulled four different ways to create content for younger audiences, and I was thinking maybe you can rank them from the most important to the least important. So the first one is to create listicles. So on the web, it comes down to how scannable your content is, and lists are very scannable and search friendly. So they're a smart way of connecting with people because our brain wants to finish things. So if you say, here's a list of 13 reasons about this, then the chances are you're going to want to look at all 13 just because it's a finite number. The second way is to connect with influencers. So there's been a huge debate on whether influencer marketing works or not. But while the jury is still out, what's kind of undisputable is that younger people do seem to like influencers and they follow them. So nearly 3/4 of Gen Z and millennials in the US follow influencers on social media. The next one is to make your content as interactive as possible and use a lot of different platforms. So, you know, up until about a year ago, everyone was busy figuring out how to present content on Snapchat, but now it's all about TikTok. So these new platforms bring new ways of interacting with your audience. There's a lot of opportunity to interact with them, like using story recaps or quizzes. And then the last one is to think mobile first. So everyone knows that young people love spending time on their phones. So understanding reader behaviors, using short paragraphs and titles with a lot of different, you know, subheadings kind of goes a long way there. So let's see, out of writing, I've never heard this before, listicles instead of articles, or just lists that are articles. Connecting with influencers, making your content interactive and using different platforms, and then thinking mobile first. So I guess with one being the most important and fourth being the least important, how would you kind of rank those?
So we did a bit of a listicle ourselves here with this. so I wrote them down so that I wouldn't, so I could fairly rank them. So I'll do it in classic countdown fashion. We'll start with number four, so the least first. So a little bit of drama here on the show. So I guess the first is listicles. I you know, what's old is new again. I don't know that that's necessarily a Gen Z thing or a younger audience thing. I think that that's a people thing. I mean, we've seen it in search results for a long time. You know, lots of articles still rank at the top because it's like the eight ways to, you know, something I was looking up earlier today, eight ways to transcribe a YouTube video, you know, that sort of thing. So I would say that's number four. Number three, it's close, but I would say probably influencer collaboration connection. I do think that that's something that's just at large. I think it used to be when you wanted parenting advice, you know, you went to your mom and dad. I do think that that's shifting both for millennials and for Gen Z, where you ask Google, you ask the web, you go to your favorite blogger, your favorite influencer, and find out like what type of stroller would they get, you know, that sort
of
thing.
That's so weird to think about too.
It's probably true, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Then I would probably go with mobile first. It's not very appealing and it's not very specific, but that approach I think is really important, especially right now where in the evenings when I'm trying to like wind down from all my podcasting and my interviews, I sit in front of my television and I largely look at my phone. And it's because even when I'm on a desktop computer, probably more so than most people, most of the content I consume is on a mobile phone. And I do find myself developing habits and developing new behaviors based on the fact that I like certain user experiences and the ways that certain people deliver their content. And just, there's certain platforms that I identify with. So I think being in lots of different places in that respect is good too. And that's, these are the number one, which is interactive content across multiple platforms. And so, you know, I think that technology is making this easier for publishers too, where, you know, if you wanted to, you know, create something interactive or complex before, you know, you better know some JavaScript or something like that. But now with modern frameworks and even headerless CMSs, you know, you're finding the ability to kind of churn out or even like app development with things like Bubble.io and a lot of the other ones that are